Good morning. So last time we finished talking about barriers. And the idea of a barrier is you want to have a bunch of threads doing something similar. You want them to just wait for everyone else. There's some steps to the whatever you're doing. You want them to finish that step before they move on to the next. And this is what we're going to have you use in the homework that's due this and next week. So there's a checkpoint for the homework due this week, and there's the second part due next week. They're both about barriers in some way, because they're one of the simplest ways when you have a bunch of threads doing basically the same thing to have them coordinate. And then we talked about more general ways of having threads synchronize, having them figure out how to act together in an intelligent way. And our first mechanism was counting semaphores. Basically, we have this special variable, which is track the number of something. And as we were tracking that, we'd increment it when there was more of whatever that resource was. We'd decrement it when there was less. An example of a resource was like space in a buffer. And semaphores would have this special rule that if there wasn't any, if you were trying to decrement it and there was already nothing, it would wait for there to be more. And we talked about monitors. So monitors are this combination of a mutex and some amount of condition variables. These condition variables are a different way of waiting for something to happen and signaling when something does. And they have an explicit wait operation for waiting and an explicit signal or broadcast operation. Signal is tell one thread that, hey, you're done waiting. Broadcast is tell all of them, hey, you're done waiting. And the pattern for using these condition variables was we had a loop where we kept waiting, then checked, well, were we actually done waiting or not? And we needed this partly because of spurious wake-ups. That was the most obvious reason, that if you read the documentation, it said, sorry, wait doesn't always work correctly. Sometimes it will just wake up when you aren't signaled. And also because there were tricky situations where the condition would become true, what we were waiting for would happen, but then someone else would sneak in before we managed to actually act on that, and then it would become false again. And these condition variables, we always paired them with a lock because we wanted to check if the condition was really true and we needed to wait, or is really false and we didn't need to wait, without letting it change. And the lock is what's going to prevent it from changing. And we looked at a classic example for both semaphores and monitors of the producer-consumer problem. And this, quite commonly, you'll look at something you want to do with multiple threads and you'll find out, that's really producer-consumer. I don't actually need to think about how monitors and semaphores work. I can just look at some existing producer-consumer code and use it, which is great. And the idea of the producer is that you have some queue. The producer just adds to the queue, and if it's full, it waits. And the consumer, we remove from the queue, and if it's empty, we can't remove, obviously, so we wait. And we saw that you can implement these with both semaphores and monitors. You might find one more or less intuitive than the other, but they're both equally valid solutions to these problems. So any questions on any of this stuff we did last time? Okay, so as I mentioned, we have our first homework out. So the checkpoint, which is basically, I want you to submit something to prove that you aren't doing the homework the 3 days before it's due, because we think it is a bigger homework than that, is to just use POSIX barriers, so the ones we showed in the lecture slides, pthread, barrier, wait, and so on, to take this serial program, this one-threaded program, and make it use multiple threads, hopefully in a way which could plausibly make it faster. If you're running it on a system with multiple cores, and if you're using a VM, if the VM has multiple cores exposed to it, like multiple virtual CPUs, then you should actually see some speed up sometimes if you do this right. Obviously, if your VM only has a single core exposed to it, or you don't have multiple cores, well, you shouldn't be surprised if you don't see speed up. We aren't going to grade on speed up, though if you do things which should be obvious won't give you speed up, we might deduct points. Like if your idea of let's use multiple threads is, well, we have a big grid, so the first thread's going to compute the first part, little cell of the grid, the second thread's going to compute the second cell of the grid, the third thread's going to compute the third cell of the grid, and the fourth thread's going to compute everything else. Like if you do that, don't be surprised if maybe we say, yeah, that doesn't make much sense. But otherwise we're not grading on speed up explicitly. But if you do things like that, which it should be clear, are probably not gonna actually let you do multiple things at once efficiently, we might not give you full credits. And similarly, like if you say, okay, we're using barriers, so our first step is do the first cell, then everyone waits. Second step is do the second cell, then everyone waits. Also not gonna work. Okay, so any questions on the life homework? For those of you who looked at it, maybe. Okay. So last time when we finished up, we looked at monitors to implement producer-consumer, and these were a little less restrictive. We had this unbounded queue, so the only case where we have to wait is in the consumer side when this queue might be empty. Because this is an unbounded queue, we're saying it just grows as big as it needs to grow. And that's simpler, but that might not be what we actually want. We might want to have a bound on how big this gets so we don't run out of memory if our producers are like twice as fast as our consumers. We're producing, assembly code twice as fast as we're converting it to object files. So a nice thing about monitors, and the reason I like them personally, is that it's relatively easy to incrementally add things you wait for. So we're gonna want to change this, and we're gonna want to make it so we also wait for the case where the buffer is full. So what we're gonna do for that, probably, is we're gonna say, okay, we're gonna add another condition variable. And that's for, is the buffer ready? And we're gonna add a while loop here that waits, because we want to wait while the buffer's not ready. And we're gonna add some code here to signal that, oh, there might be space now. And I know to add it there because I know I want to wait before I enqueue into a full buffer, because I don't want to try to do that. That's not gonna work. And I know after I dequeue that that's the point at which spaces might be free now. So that's how I know to choose those two places to touch the code. And then, so I know I need this condition variable, I know I need my while loop to wait for it there, I just need to think of what's the condition going to be, and it's just going to be, is the buffer still full? And when do I signal? I signal if the buffer's no longer full. So we add code here. So we just add those two pieces of code. So here I'm saying while the buffer is full, because I can't do conditionals. So while the buffer is full, we want to wait. If the buffer is not full, we want to keep going. So while the buffer is full, we just wait. That's straightforward. The condition is while it's full, we wait. We didn't have to do any counting. We're just checking if that's true. And if we just made the buffer not full, then we signal. And I know I just made the buffer not full. If there's exactly one free space, it was just full, now it's not. And this probably isn't quite right, actually. So what might be, well, no, okay, no, this is, yeah, right, this is fine. You know, we're just, only if it's done, we do that. Now, you can be a little sloppier than this. So let's say I just get rid of this condition here. I just say, I'm just gonna signal always. Is that gonna cause a problem? So it's not, so why not, I should say. It's not gonna cause a problem. Why is that gonna cause a problem if I just always signal? Yeah. So if two threads are true at the same time, so I think this is not gonna cause a problem. So what's gonna happen if we have some extra signaling? So when that condition's not true, there's no need to wait. So how many threads should be waiting? How many producers will be waiting? So we'll have a producer, we'll have our queue with a producer here. And the first time we dequeue it, but it's no one's waiting and we signal, it's not a problem. Right? And if the buffer's not full, no one's gonna be waiting. So it's not actually a problem if we just signal unconditionally and we can just do that. We don't care that we're signaling no one. The condition variable implementation is going to figure out, oh, the queue's empty, no problem, I just don't have anything to do. So we don't actually need that. And we also can do this version. We can just broadcast. So why is that okay? So what's going to happen if we broadcast? So we have a bunch of producers waiting, and I decide I'm going to broadcast instead of signaling. So I have a bunch of producers waiting, the queue is full, I free up one entry in the queue by consuming. So here's my queue, all but this one entry is free, and I decide to tell all the producers, you can go. What's going to happen? What's the first thing the producer is going to do? Yeah. One of them is going to get the lock, because remember what condition wait does is it waits for something, and when it's signaled, it first acquires the lock again. Okay, so it gets the lock, and then? So all the other ones are waiting for the lock. And what's the first thing, first piece of code it's going to execute when it gets the lock? To put something in the buffer. There's some code before that that it executes first. So we just finished, we just exited and got to here. What happens next? What's the next piece of code that runs? Just as a how does C work question. When I get to where I just drew that error. We check if the buffer is full. So the first thing we do after we wake up from waiting is we check if the buffer is full. So if we broadcast, the first one's gonna say, oh, the buffer's not full. I'm gonna add something to it, and I'm done. Okay, so that's our first one. Then this next one is also woken up. It's gonna get the lock. It's gonna check, is the buffer full? It's gonna say, oh my, it is. I'm gonna have to keep waiting again. So it's perfectly fine to replace the signal with a broadcast in the sense that it's not wrong. We're not going to get the wrong answer. We aren't going to try to enqueue onto a full buffer. That's guaranteed not to happen because we check if the buffer is full every time we wake up before we actually enqueue onto it. So we just have more what looks like spurious wake-ups. Yes? So which one should you choose? So the benefit of being able to choose broadcast is that if you're lazy, your code won't be wrong. It's obviously better to signal if you only need to wake up one, because less things will be running, it will be faster. So another thing we could do is that we could say, oh, I have two condition variables here. I could just replace them with one. Now, this is not also not something you should do, but from the perspective of speed, and I will do my correction of this again, which I will fix in the slides when I upload them tonight or later today, is that we could just have them all use the same condition variable, in which case sometimes we signal the wrong one, the wrong threads. We could combine them. As long as we're broadcasting, it wouldn't matter. So correct but slow, combine condition variable ready, and broadcast. So if we always broadcast, that wouldn't be a problem. We could just wake up threads willy-nilly instead of worrying about are we waking up the right one. But we obviously don't want to do that because every time we're waking up extra threads, we're slowing things down. So the general pattern we're going to see for monitors is that we have, you know, our routine that accesses the shared data. We have some condition we need to wait for. While the condition isn't true, we loop, and we have this condition variable for every condition, ideally. And then we change the data and we figure out, well, did we change any of the things people might be waiting for? We just go through the list of all the condition variables and we say, did we change that the condition that we checked for when we loop over that condition variable? And if so, we broadcast into that condition variable. If we know that exactly one thread's going to be able to do something, we can signal instead of broadcasting. But sort of the default is you assume everyone needs to wake up. And that's the sort of general pattern. So any questions about this pattern? And we have some leeway because this is double checking the condition that we can, if we're unsure whether we changed the condition, we can broadcast anyways and it's not wrong, which might be handy for, you know, making it easier to write the code. But probably, you know, ideally you don't want to have threads executing that loop more than they need to. So this is our general pattern. So, the rules of thumb for dealing with monitors. So first of all, we have a lock. We never ever touch the shared data without the lock, which means that we never check, do we need to wait without the lock? We never actually change the thing we're waiting for without the lock. We always use the lock before we acquire any of the things that are associated with the monitor. And we hold the lock for the entire operation. So from the time we stop waiting until the time we actually do whatever we were waiting to do, we both check that we can do that safely and do it with the lock. We don't say, okay, the buffer's not full, then let the lock go away, do something with the buffer. We have to keep the lock held to make sure that no one changes whether the buffer's full. And we create a condition variable for everything we need to wait for. So we saw with our producer-consumer example, we had one condition variable for is the buffer full? Do we have space? We had one condition variable for is the buffer empty? Do we have data? And when we wait for it, we just have this loop where we call cond wait, we check the condition first, then we call cond wait, then we check the condition again afterwards, just in case we had a spurious wake up or some bad timing, or we were being sloppy and we were broadcasting when we should have, when we might have made more sense to signal. And we also need to correspondingly broadcast or signal the condition variable every time that condition changes. And because we can choose what the condition X is pretty flexibly, this is a very general mechanism that as long as we can express what we're waiting for, and we'll see some examples of that later, we can have lots of policies about when we let threads do things and enforce all of them. And with this, so I know there are things that were correct but slow to do. So we can always broadcast when signal would work. Should we? No, because we're going to wake up extra threads, but because they double check the condition, our code's not going to give the wrong answer. We can always broadcast or signal when nothing's changed. So we could have sloppy code where we just say, I might have changed what's in the buffer. I'll just broadcast just in case. Like, that's not going to be wrong, it's just going to be slower than we need to be. And we can always use one convair for multiple conditions, assuming we broadcast on it appropriately. Broadcast instead of signal, but we probably shouldn't do that. You probably should say, I'm checking for different things, and I'm broadcasting when any of them might have changed. I probably should split it up into separate ones. But it's correct to just broadcast on a condition variable anytime anything changes, and just double check, have every thread check the condition after it might have changed, and see if the part they cared about changed, not just anything. Okay. So with that in mind, I should have done the. We have our consume. Which was produces the while, so it, which is lock while exclamation point while the buffer is empty, wait, and DQ unlock. So let's say I want to take our producer consumer and I call the code. So the consume code is lock while the buffer is empty, wait, then DQ, then unlock. Let's say I want to change it to you do consume two, where consume two, instead of consuming one value, DQing one thing, it DQs two things and returns them. And an important thing about this is if I produce twice and I have two threads calling consume two at the same time, I want one of them to actually return. I don't want it to be the case that one thread gets one thing, one thread gets the other thing, and they both just keep waiting forever. I want them to get that pair, one of them to get a pair of values. So how do I implement this? What do I change in the code we had previously for our unbounded queue to make that work? So what's going to be different? So I have while the buffer is empty, I'm waiting, then I DQ and I unlock. So one of the things I'm obviously doing is I'm going to DQ twice. That's one thing I'm changing. So what else? Yeah?
We have to check if the buffer is empty.
Yeah. So instead of checking, I'll try to use a different color. So instead of checking if the buffer is empty, we're going to check if the buffer has two spaces. And since we're checking that before we dequeue twice, we know that both of those dequeues will succeed. We won't get an array index out of bounds exception from our queue, or a set fault. So is there anything else I need to do? So who thinks that's all I need to do? I just need to change what I'm checking for to buffer has two spaces and it's going to work. Who thinks, no, it's not going to work, something's going to go wrong? Okay, any one of those people who thinks the second option have an opinion as to why? Yeah.
I don't know if this is right, but if you have a bunch of consumers waiting and you signal when there's only one thing in and then they find that there's nothing there, they would wait again and end up at the back of the queue.
Okay, so you're worried that we're not going to preserve the right order. And I agree that that is indeed a thing that is likely to happen if our condition variables like had things wait in order, that indeed we are going to be disrupting the order because we're going to be waking up threads because we signal anytime we add something that we're going to wake up threads, they're going to do nothing, and that's wasteful, first of all. We'd like to avoid it. And it's also going to take them out of order. So this is not actually a correctness problem. This is sort of a preference problem. But we can fix it. We can both avoid waking up threads, having them find out, oh, of course there's not two items in the buffer yet. Because we signal every time we add one item. So we're signaling after there's now one item in the buffer. So what's our fix for that? Yeah. Yeah, so we just add an if statement here, and if the buffer has, you know, greater than or equal to two items, then we signal. Yeah.
Say you have like 1,000 threads, right? And all of them but one has like these two items, but the rest all only need one. Do you not care about like the possibility that this one thing that needs two of them has to wait like all the way to the end?
Yeah. So our assumption here is that we're changing consume to consume two. You're right that if we had both, then we have a starvation problem here, that our consume to thread is never going to get to go. And we'd have to figure out, you know, how do we fix that? Or can we fix that? So, any questions about this exercise here? Okay. So, that's monitors. So, we talked about both monitors and semaphores, and I'd like to prove that they're equally as powerful as, you know, either can do everything the other can. And the easiest way of proving that is showing that you can take a monitor and implement a semaphore, and that you can take semaphores and implement a monitor. So I'm going to start with the easy direction, which is taking a monitor and implementing a semaphore. So what should we do? Going back to our list here to do that. So what are we going to have? So first of all, what data does our monitor have? Our semaphore have? So we have a semaphore. What information are we going to have? So we know we have a lock because we're implementing it with a monitor. and we have probably at least one condition variable, what else do we need to keep track of? What other information does a monitor have? Like actual information that we need to keep track of. Or semaphore have, sorry. Yeah.
The number of threads available.
The count. The number of the resource available. Which sometimes is, you know, threads which can go. And we have a count. Okay, so this is our count. Okay. So we need the lock held whenever we're touching the count. So whenever we're reading or writing the count, we're going to have to take the lock, make sure that we aren't having two people trying to increment the count at the same time, and then that doesn't work. Like both of them write the new value and we miss a count being added. And when we read it, we want to make sure that you don't like read that the count is zero and then decide to go to sleep, but the count became one while you're deciding that. So we have to hold the lock while we touch the count. When do we need to wait in a semaphore? What's the condition? So we have a condition variable for everything we need to wait for. What things do we need to wait for with a semaphore? And it helps remember our two operations are up and down. Yeah.
Just down on zero.
Down on zero. So wait while zero. That's our condition is, you know, is it still zero? Is what we're waiting on. So we have a condition variable for that, and we're going to need to signal it whenever we make it not zero. We're going to change it from being zero to something else, and we're going to wait on it while it's still zero, and we're doing a down operation. Okay, and that's indeed what we need to do it. So we have our lock, we have our shared state, our count, we have our condition variable, which we signal when the count becomes positive from being zero, and we have our down operation while the count is not greater than zero. We wait, and then we decrement the count. And our up operation, we increment the count. If the count became one, which means it was just zero, we signal. So any questions about this implementation? Everyone hope see how we constructed it from those sort of rules. So you could hopefully do this for some other problem where you need to use monitors. So that's implementing semaphores with monitors. The other direction is more complicated. So we have two components we need to implement going the other way, is that we need to use semaphores to implement locks, and that turns out to not be a problem. We already saw that example. So that part's easy. And then we need to implement condition variables, and that's a bit trickier. Because the idea of counting doesn't work so naturally with condition variables. And the main issue is that if you signal a condition variable that has no one waiting, nothing happens. And that's not how the up operation on a semaphore works. Up on a semaphore says, if I do up, then that later on is going to make some down complete immediately. Semaphores have this memory that, oh, you called up earlier, I don't care how much earlier, they're remembering this number. So we can do the obvious thing, and with our rules about spurious wake-ups, it's not going to be wrong. You know, we're just waking up some threads in the far future that aren't waiting yet. But because we allow spurious wake-ups, it turns out this is a correct but not very nice implementation. Because if we have this sitting around for a while, we're going to be waking up like thousands of times rather than just like occasionally we would get unlucky. So that's not good. So any ideas on how we could fix this? And the idea is we don't want to call post all the time. We only want to call it if it's going to do something. So how can we figure that out? Yeah?
Could you not just put semicolon post in like an if statement and just say count if one don't post?
Yeah, so we're going to want to have a count. We're going to say if anyone is waiting, then post. And we need to track if anyone's waiting. The way we can do that is we can just have a count of how many people are waiting. We can say plus plus waiting and minus minus waiting. Okay. So we can do that style of implementation. So here I'm protecting the number of waiters with a lock implemented with another semaphore to make sure that, you know, because we know add isn't atomic, we need to do that. Okay, so this is a reasonable implementation. And will work, and we can even figure out how to implement broadcast. What's broadcast going to do? How's broadcast going to be different than signal? What do we change to change signal into broadcast? Here. Yeah.
If to while.
If to while, yeah. So changing signal to broadcast is we just cross out signal, write broadcast, and cross out this if, write while, and now we're gonna acquire the lock to make sure no one's changing num waiters while we're working, and then we're just gonna do the up operation. So we're gonna increment the count of number of threads to wake up to the number of waiters. So that's our broadcast operation. There we go, we did it. So, someone had a complaint earlier about how they hoped condition variables would work with respect to order. And what we would imagine is that what we'd like is that things get woken up in order. And this doesn't really guarantee that, necessarily. But we could modify it to guarantee that. How could we do that? What if I wanted to ensure that the first thread that started waiting is the first one that gets woken up? How can I make sure that happens? Yeah. What? So add that to a queue. And what should that queue contain? So how do we refer to the thread? The PID. So the idea is that we're gonna have a way of signaling a PID, and that's great, but that doesn't use semaphores. It's not something we can do with semaphores. We haven't seen a wake up by PID operation, though it would be something we could implement. But how could we simulate that idea? Yeah.
Index the thread by the count.
Index the thread by the count. Okay. So we have the thread knows it's, we know the count that corresponds to the thread. What do we do with that information? Does the thread use it? Does the whatever's doing signal use it?
Yeah, whatever's signaling
looks up the appropriate thread. How does it wake it up? What operation on this slide wakes up a thread? Post. So how can we make sure do a post, but have it wake up a particular thread? Sorry? No? Okay. So we have to post on a semaphore. So a way we can make sure we're waking up a particular thread is we can have only one thread waiting on a semaphore. So we can make a semaphore for that particular thread, have it be the only one waiting on it, and then when we post it, we're definitely waking up that thread, not some other thread that our scheduler randomly decided was the right one to wake up. So we can just do that with a, if we have a queue. They just have a queue of semaphores. And we can do the same trick with condition variables, by the way. We can have a queue of condition variables. And this is the sort of thing you might do if you actually really care about getting things in a particular order. So you have a queue of semaphores, or equivalently, a queue of condition variables. Or Conti to, if you want to wake up, to use CV with an order. And this is a common trick you might see used if, like, you actually care about order. You can make your own queues of threads by having a queue of either semaphores or of condition variables where you know what thread is waiting on them. Okay, so any questions about our, normal monitor with semaphore solution? Yeah? Why do we have the if statement doing the post? So when we didn't do that what would happen is we call signal when no one was waiting, and later on someone would call wait and they'd wake up immediately. And we know that wouldn't cause incorrect behavior because they have the while loop, but like we might have called signal like 1,000 times, in which case they'll execute that while loop doing nothing 1,000 times. And we definitely want to avoid that. So, any other questions about our relationship with monitors and semaphores? Okay. So I'm going to move on to another common pattern. So we saw producer-consumer, that's a useful pattern. We want to have one thread, just do the same thing over and over again, produce values that another thread needs to use. So another common example is we have some shared data, and we wanted to be the case that, if we're changing the shared data, only one thread can do that at a time. We don't want to change from under someone, but a lot of threads might just be reading the data. It might be data which is mostly just something you read. Like we have a database, most of the time we're just reading the database, like displaying it on a website, like consider like loose-list. But while we're updating what's displayed on loose-list, like the enrollment counts and the list of courses, it would be really confusing if we read part of the unupdated version and part of the updated version. We'd get like mixed up numbers. So we want to protect people from reading it while it's being modified. And we could just use a normal lock. That would be correct. But it would be slow, because if multiple people want to read, they'd have to take turns, even though there's no reason for that. Like, you don't need to take turns if you're only reading. There's no possible confusion to happen. So we'd like to implement this abstraction known as a reader-writer lock. So a reader-writer lock is going to have four operations, two pairs. So it's going to have a read lock operation, which is going to wait until there are no writers. And the unlock says is the corresponding undo that, I'm not reading anymore. We have a write lock operation, which waits until there are no readers and no writers. And our unlock operation says I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not writing anymore. I'm going to use the word write, but when I say write lock, I mean read and write lock, because you're reading and writing, presumably to update the data. You're allowed to read when you have a write lock, because writing is more powerful than reading in this sense. It's more restrictive. Okay. And this, in fact, is so useful that POSIX provides it. So POSIX provides its own reader-writer locks, which have an API that looks like this. So even though you could implement these yourself, and we'll show how with monitors or with semaphores, POSIX provides its own abstraction, which is its hopefully optimized implementation of reader-writer locks, just because this pattern comes up so often that people really want to do it and want to do it fast. So, if we want to implement this with monitors, So we need to figure out, okay, so we have our lock. And we have some share, some data that the lock, some bookkeeping information. And we have our conditions. So can anyone tell me either what bookkeeping do we need to do, what numbers do we need to keep track of, or what are our conditions that we need to, things we need to wait for in this case? Which we're going to tell us what our condition variables are. So what things do we need to wait for? Hints, it's, you can just copy what's on the slide, yes. Okay, so you say the number of writers and the number of readers. And why would you say that that seems like a thing we need to keep track of?
Because you don't want to lead when there's anyone writing, and you don't want to write when there's anyone reading or writing.
Yeah, so our condition says no writers, no readers, and no writers. So if we want to know whether there are no writers, maybe we should keep track of how many writers there are. If we want to know when there are no readers, we should keep track of how many readers there are. And this is the general pattern we're going to see when you have conditions like this, is that, well, if you want to know how many there are, if there are none, you should count. So you're going to write code to count, you're going to keep that count, and when you update that count, you're going to use the lock that's associated with the monitor. Okay, so those are the bookkeeping information, and that's all I can see based on what's written here. How about our condition variables? What are the things that we need condition variables to start waiting for something and to signal someone that something changed? So someone tell me what one of them is going to be for. What condition is it going to, what conditions do we need to wait for? Yeah. If there's writers, you say? Yeah, so if writers, so we have one condition variable for here. So this is a CV to say while there's no writers, if there's no writers now, but there was before, we have a CV to signal when that changes. So wait while no writers. And there's one more. What's the other one going to be waiting for? Yeah. What? No readers. It's no readers or writers. Yeah. So, reader or writer. So wait, if reader or writer. So those are two conditionals. One to wait if there's a writer. One to wait if there's a reader or writer. Depending on whether you want to read or write. Okay. So this gets us to construct our state. So as mentioned, we need to track the number of readers and writers. And we have a signal for, is it okay to read now? Is it okay to write now? Which are correspond to exactly if no readers or writers for is it okay to write, and if no readers for is it okay, if no writers for is it okay to read. And I'm writing Conti instead of pre-thread Conti just to save space in the slide. So then we just have our code. So we have for our read lock, while there's no writers, While there's writers, rather, we wait for it to be okay to read in our writer. When we're done writing, we say, okay, now it's okay to read. So we broadcast, because multiple readers could be ready. So you wake up all of them, tell them, yeah, it's okay to read now. So they're gonna wake up, they're gonna double check, well, is it still okay to read, or did some other writer sneak in? And that is going to let them, then they're going to start reading. Okay. So on our readers set, when we decrement the number of readers, we might be changing whether there are no readers or writers. So if there are no readers, we know there's no writers because we just read and we couldn't be reading while someone was writing. So if there are no readers or writers, we signal to wake up one writer who is waiting up here. Similarly, after we're done writing, there might be no writers or readers now, the fact is, so we signal to also wake up one writer who can now go, potentially. So, questions on this? And otherwise, we just need to have our correct bookkeeping code that we track. We increment the number of readers when we're done waiting for there to be no writers. We increment the number of writers when we're done waiting for there to be no writers and readers. And we decrement those values when we do the unlock operation. And notice the subtle point that after we're done changing the number of readers and the number of writers, we don't need the lock anymore. That this mutex we use to implement this, we don't hold it for the entire time because all we need to do have it to protect is when we're changing the reader count and the writer count or reading the reader count and the writer count. And we only do that during the lock and unlock operations themselves, not while someone is writing or someone is reading. And that's very important because otherwise we couldn't have multiple readers at the same time. So any questions on this so far? Okay, so you might notice here that we're waking up the writer and we're waking up the readers. So who goes first? In this solution, we wake them all up and they fight. Someone gets the lock first. They win. If they're a writer, we write next. If they're a reader, we read next. So this is correct. It's just like, what's this gonna happen? Hard to say. And this is a policy question. Do you want writers to go first, or do you want readers to go first? And this implementation, we're not really making a decision, we're just saying, we're gonna let them both go, and we're gonna let the threading library figure out which actually gets woken up and scheduled first, and acquires the lock. And maybe ideally, because we're signaling the writer first, that the writer would go first if there's a writer, but pthreads is not actually gonna guarantee that, because it's kind of gonna depend on what gets scheduled. But we can be explicit about this. We can make an explicit decision about which one we do. So our idea is that if I want writers to go first, is that if there's a writer waiting, I'm going to signal the writer, I'm not going to signal the readers. If I want readers to go first, if there's a reader waiting, I'm going to signal the readers, I'm not going to signal the writer. So how do we know when we should do that? How can we know that there's a writer waiting? So I'll give you a hint. How do we know that there were no writers active? How in this code here did I know that no writers were running when I was acquiring a lock? Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to use the same idea. We want to find out, how do I know there's no writers waiting? I'm going to count how many writers are waiting. I'm just going to keep track, just like I was keeping track of how many writers were finished locking and hadn't unlocked. I'm going to keep track of how many writers started waiting but hadn't finished their waiting. So I add a waiting writers count. And I use that count and keep track of it. So in my write lock, before I start waiting, before I start that while loop, I increment that count, say someone is waiting. And when I'm done that while loop, I decrement the count. Say someone is not waiting. And I can check that count elsewhere. I can say, when I'm getting the read lock, I say, oh, there's no writers, but also if some writer is waiting, I want to give them a chance. I'm not gonna go, so I'm gonna wait while there's no writers, and no writers are waiting. That should be exclamation point equals. I probably should actually run this code. Occurs to me. So, and similarly, when I'm unlocking, I say, okay, if they're waiting writers, I want to single one of those writers to go. Otherwise, I'll only single the readers. So I won't wake up the readers if they can't go yet. And we can use this pattern pretty generally, that if you have some condition where you want to say, gosh, I don't want these threads to just fight, I want to choose who goes, you say, well, how do I figure out who goes? In this case, I say, I want to the writers to go, the readers to go only if no writer is waiting. Well, you say only if no writer is waiting, you should say, okay, that means they have to know how many writers are waiting. I can count that. And that's going to be generally true when you're using something like monitors, is that if you need to count something, you can just add a variable that's the count of that and adjust it as the count changes. When someone starts waiting, you add to the waiting count. Someone stops waiting, you remove from the waiting count. And so here, I've used tracking the number of waiting writers to track how many, you know, whether writers can go now. You know, and give writers priority by knowing whether there are writers that I should let go. And we can use the same idea, yes, and that's to deal with giving readers priority, that we can track the number of waiting readers in the same way that when a reader starts waiting, we increment the number of waiting readers. When the reader's done waiting, we decrement it. And then we check before a writer goes, we say, you should only go if no readers are waiting. And now instead of giving writers the first chance, we give writers only go if readers aren't doing it. Yes?
Should those two be
like the signal on the broadcast? Here? Where? These? If there are no waiting readers,
okay,
then signal a writer. Otherwise, signal all the readers that are waiting.
Okay.
I think that's fine. I think I wrote this code first, which is why the exclamation point equals zero error occurred there.
Okay.
Yeah, so in that write unlock case, we say if no readers are waiting, we start writing again, we keep writing. We get someone else to get a chance to write, otherwise all the readers can go again. So any questions on this solution here? And what I want you to see is that if you have all, you can take pretty much any sort of policy you can write down, and you can figure out a way of implementing it. You just need to keep track of information about who's waiting, what are they waiting for, and so on. And just check that before you let people go. Whether people go is going to depend on what are the other threads doing, which you just keep track of. And I note that you can do more sophisticated versions. So you can like have a list of items. So like you can have a list of condition variables. If like you want them to go in a particular order, and the thread can be waiting for, you can have like int next ID. Like, you can do things like that, where you can like enforce a very particular order, have a list of condition variables who signal the next thread in the list, and so on. So you can like enforce very exact orders if that's what you want to do. Like, the flexibility is there. You might need more condition variables and more other states, which might be more complicated than just counters. But as long as you can figure out how to write the condition, the thing you're waiting for in the while loop, you can do it. And you can write down that in English, and then you figure out, oh, I need to know how many waiters there are, or I need to know if I'm the first one in line. You just need a way to know that, which means that you may need to add a variable, like you might have a Boolean for every thread. Are you first in line? Are you ready to go? Now you have something you can wait on. So. So, just to go through this more, so let's take our writer priority code here, and let's look at how it works. So here, saying I have my writer count, my reader count, and my waiting writer count, and I have reader one comes, reader two comes, then a writer comes, then a reader comes. So what's going to happen with this lock implementation? So the first thing that happens is reader one comes. What is reader one going to do? We have our writer count, our reader count, and our waiting writer count. So what's it going to do? So it comes, it's going to read lock, it's going to do a read, some reading. Yeah.
I was going to handle it. I guess, would you just increment the reader count?
Yeah, so it increments the reader count. So it acquires the lock, increments the reader count, says, oh, there's no writers, I'm good to go, and I'm going to start reading. So we look at, we say, there's no waiting writers, increment the reader count, we're done, we've acquired the lock, and now we can read. And that's going to be outside of the lock. Then our second reader can come along, do the same thing. It says, there's no writers, I can go start reading, increments the reader count, and we start reading. Meanwhile, our writer comes along, it increments the waiting writer count, and it says, oh, there are readers or writers, so I have to wait. So it's going to wait. And our reader comes along. And since our reader came along after we incremented the waiting writer count, it's going to say, oh, there's a waiting writer, so I have to wait even though I'm reading. Because the waiting writer has priority, I'm waiting in line behind them. So that was the policy we chose. Then eventually, reader one finishes, so it decrements the number of readers, it checks if it's zero to see if it needs to signal a writer to go, and it finds out, nope, it's not. Then our second reader finishes, it decrements the reader count to zero, so it says, okay, this means a writer can go, so I'm going to signal that a writer can go. So then our writer finally wakes up, it checks the count of writers plus readers, it finds out that there's none of both of them, and so it says, I'm done, so I remove myself as a waiting writer, add myself as a writer, and start writing. So it's reading and writing now, then it finishes up, it says, okay, I'm done, I decremented my writer's count, and now, are there any waiting writers? No. Are there any waiting? Yeah. Did I? Yeah. Are there any waiting writers? No. So I'm going to broadcast on the OK to read. Let me say it's OK to read. And that's going to finally wake up our third reader, which was waiting behind the writer. And it's going to say, OK, now there's no writers and no readers. I can start reading. So this timeline makes sense. Let's see how we're keeping track of the state and deciding appropriately when to signal things. At least when you fix the exclamation mark equal error. Yeah.
The first two readers were like kicked off anyway, they just
exited.
Yeah, so the first, so the question is, the first two readers, when a writer came along, they weren't kicked off, and they weren't because they weren't writing any of our code which deals with the monitor, with the lock, with the reader and writer count. So there, we had no way of doing that. So any other questions? Okay. So let's say we want to expand this. And right now, if there are multiple waiting writers, you know, it's whoever wins gets it. Let's say we want to keep them in order. How could we add that? With the writers to go in order instead of just whoever manages to get the lock first at the time when writers can go. How can we ensure, make sure that they come, that the order they start, they call write lock is the order they actually get the lock. We want to make that 100% sure that that happens. What information should we keep track of? Yeah. So a linked list. Okay, so we could keep track of the time. That's one option. Or you said a linked list of
which one
asked to write. And it turns out this solution is probably simpler. So I'm going to show a version of the linked list solution. We have a queue of waiting writers, and we just have a little struct, which is a condition variable and a are you ready to go yet? And when you write lock, you know, if you can't, if writers or readers, you know, if no one can go, you start doing this. And we just need to look at the queue. Instead of signaling, we're going to look at the queue, and we're going to remove someone from the queue, set them to ready, and keep going. So yeah, I've been writing this slide, but we only write this, add ourselves to the queue, obviously, if we have to wait. So someone's going to wake us up. Someone's going to set us to ready and wake us up. Like someone finishes reading or someone finishes writing, they're going to say, oh, the queue's not empty. I'm going to wake one of these writers up. So this idea makes sense. And there's another pattern we could use, which you might consider cheating, which is that we could just have a thread. We could, instead of doing the writes in the threads which call write lock, we just have a thread which does the writes from the queue instead of having a queue of thread. Queue of are you ready in your condition variable. So instead of write, get the write lock, do our reading and writing task, and do the unlock, we just represent the task, add it to a queue, and have a thread which just dequeues it, like our producer consumer example. This is probably more often what you'd see in real code. So the idea here is that we've just said, well, if the writers can only go one at a time, we might as well just have one thread which just does all the writers. The problem is that we have to package up the writing they're doing into this blob that we can just run, which sometimes is easy, sometimes is not. You have to have this task which represents whatever code they were running. So this idea makes sense. Yeah.
So if a writer is not woken up to it, if you wake up a writer too early, does that mean you're resetting their like order?
If a writer
gets woken up too early,
does that change the order they run? So like in this example?
Yeah.
So the way we prevent that is by having this ready signal here, ready boolean here. So if they wake up from cond wait early, they're going to say, was I marked as ready? And the idea is we mark things as ready in the order they appear in the queue.
So the queue is separate from
be separate from the condition variable?
Yeah, so this is a queue we are maintaining that is not part of the condition variable. And we're doing this because we don't know how the condition variable's queue works. Like, if we knew, we could just rely on it. I'm not saying you should do this. Probably you're just usually happy enough with the order the condition variable will get you. But like, if you really care about order, you can do it. You can have people wait. Typically, you're just going to be happy with our reader-writer lock solution. And that's where we're going to do it. But I did this exercise just to point out that like, you have the full flexibility to like choose an arbitrary order for things to happen in, and you can make it work. That you can have like arrays of stuff you keep track of if you need to. Like, you're not going to need to do this like for our life assignment, for example. We're going to have you implement barriers. You don't need this to implement barriers. You're going to use a solution which looks more like this. We're going to have some counts that you keep track of, most likely, if you use monitors. Okay, so any questions about reader-writer locks or monitors so far? Everyone feel like they're ready to implement barriers with monitors or with semaphores? Because that's the homework. It's not much code, but you obviously actually should probably understand what's going on, and we're going to like check that your code doesn't miss some cases. Okay, so next time we're going to talk about a few miscellaneous threading topics, the first one of which is going to be the problem of deadlock. So I'll just introduce what deadlock is. We've seen an example of deadlock earlier. So here, let's say I have a one-way bridge. I have two drivers here, and you know, our algorithm for driving here is just gonna be, well, the road ahead of me is free, so I can just keep going. Yeah, so the road ahead of me is free, I'm just gonna keep going, and wait, well, so this problem is known as deadlock, that we, you know, we're both waiting for each other to go, and we both decided I'm going forwards as long as the road ahead of me is free, and I'm not going. And there's obvious solutions here. Like in this human case, you're gonna say, someone needs to back up. And we're gonna talk about avoiding the equivalent problem, which is like with locks, where I acquire a lock, I'm waiting for a lock that you have, but you're also waiting for the lock I have. And that's what we'll talk about next time. And see you on Thursday.